Do you feel bad about feeling bad? Negative emotions like grief, sadness, and fear are universal, and yet our think positive culture can stigmatize these feelings. A better approach might be the one laid out in Night Vision, Seeing Ourselves Through Dark Moods by Mariana Alessandri. Mariana is a teacher and philosopher, and in her book, she draws on wisdom from the existentialists and other big thinkers to offer a way through difficult times. Here she is to share five of her big ideas.
What's up, book eaters? Me llamo Mariana Alessandri, and I wrote Night Vision, Seeing Ourselves Through Dark Moods. I teach philosophy to college students, a large percentage of whom live with anxiety, depression, and other dark moods. They tell me that their brains are broken, that they're mentally ill, that something's fundamentally wrong with them. Night Vision is me trying to come up with healthier ways to talk about emotional pain so we can stop calling people broken. Before I get to the five insights I've learned from existentialist philosophers, here's the reigning metaphor of the book. We live in a culture so obsessed with love and light that we've become intolerant of dark moods. There's a poster at my airport that says, "It will get brighter," and shows a light at the end of the tunnel. A woman at the gate is wearing a t-shirt that says, "Stay positive." My son's soccer coach wears one that says, "Hashtag no bad days." This is the imposition of what I call the light metaphor. All the little suggestions that light is better than dark, happiness hipper than sadness, tranquility trendier than anger, and optimism holier than pessimism. I wrote this book because I have bad days, and I can't stay positive. I don't want to keep looking on the bright side, and I don't want to live under eternal sunshine or surrounded by pillows that tell me I'm blessed. I'm not surprised that we're pressured into staying sunny, but it's making us feel bad about feeling bad. The underbelly of the light metaphor is the brokenness story, and it gets activated every time we fail to make our own sunshine. We, who live with anger, sadness, grief, depression, and anxiety, often feel like we're the oddballs of society, like everyone else is Tigger and we're grumpy little Eeyores. As an existentialist, though, I believe to my bones that to be human is to live with darkness. We hurt, we bleed, we die. And we watch our people hurt, bleed, and die. When we shine a light on our dark moods, the light of ancient philosophy or Western medicine or self-help, we fleshy, tender creatures end up looking ugly, diseased, disordered, dysfunctional, deficient, infirm, mentally ill, or pathological. I don't know if I can make you feel better, but I'm pretty sure I know what's making you feel worse. Here are five key insights from my five chapters: anger, dolor, grief, depression, and anxiety. Insight number one, let's not default to anger is irrational. The ancient Greek and Roman Stoics said we shouldn't let ourselves feel anger. Have you ever said, "I'm sorry I got angry"? That's Stoic. Aristotle said it's okay to get angry as long as we don't act on it. So if you've ever said something like, "I'm sorry I yelled," that's more Aristotle. In the light of ancient philosophy, anger is something I should control, suppress, or diffuse if I can't prevent it. In the dark, anger looks different. Audre Lorde said that all women have an arsenal of anger that's just waiting for us to tap into. She says we can use anger to excavate honesty, to get to the heart of injustice instead of assuming there's something wrong with us for allowing ourselves to get angry. If we diffuse our anger on a punching bag, for example, she might think that's just a waste of a perfectly dark mood. Maria Lugones also saw anger in the dark. For these women of color, anger is self-care. It's information. It's useful. It's clear-headed. Almost the opposite of what the ancient philosophers believed. In the light, anger looks poisonous. The answer? Get rid of it. In the dark, anger looks like information. The answer? Listen to it. Insight number two, if bodies are united by pleasure, souls are united by pain. I see little boys on my son's baseball team being told not to cry. Why? The Epicureans believed that a happy life consisted of maximizing pleasure and minimizing pain. They wanted us to feel as little emotional pain as possible. In the chapter, I actually use the word in Spanish, dolor, because it captures many types of pain in one. In the light of Epicureanism and positive psychology, dolor looks unhealthy, shameful. Have you ever felt like you're failing at happiness? I still hear people talk about dolor like having a pity party or wallowing. The Spanish philosopher Miguel de Unamuno helps me see dolor in the dark. His life was very dark. He lost a child and suffered a lot more after that. But he was constantly defending himself against people who say you should keep your suffering private. Dolor, he noticed, can draw people closer. He believed that people connect better when they're sad, because happy people are often worried that someone's going to bring them down. He also thought that suffering recognizes suffering. Stephen Colbert said something similar to Anderson Cooper in an interview about death. Colbert was talking about losing his father and brothers as a young child, and he said that the experience made him more able to recognize suffering even today, even when someone's trying to hide it. In the light, dolor looks self-indulgent. In the dark, dolor looks like an opening for true connection. Insight number 3, society mishandles your grief. When you grieve the death of a loved one, you make people squirm. This explains why grievers hide their pain. Did you ever hide your pain for the sake of others? Cicero said grief is optional because he witnessed a soldier on the battlefield not cry after losing a child. He said you shouldn't indulge your grief. It's weak and womanish. You should get over the death of your loved ones as quickly as possible with the help of busyness and distraction in the way of poetry and philosophy. In a light like this, grief makes you look broken. Since 2010, there have been trials for grief medication. It's looking more and more like a mental illness. But there's a lot of opposition to the idea that grief is sick. There are lots of people who sit in the darkness of grief and defend it. The British writer C.S. Lewis was one. He wrote a whole book on how the death of his wife shattered his faith. He was ashamed of his grief, but he wrote the book anyway. In the light, grief looks like something we need to get over. In the dark, grief looks like love. Megan Devine is a grief expert who lost her partner, and she says, grief isn't a problem to be solved. It's an experience to be tended. Insight number 4. Depression is more than illness. How do we talk about depression? It's a mental illness suffered by twice as many women than men. People I know feel ashamed of having a depression diagnosis and don't like to talk about it. That means that if I suffer from depression, I also likely suffer from shame. In the light, depression used to look sinful, like laziness. In some cultures, it's still seen as a personal weakness. In the mainstream U.S. culture, it's gone from weakness to illness, like alcoholism. Psychiatrists like Peter Kramer have a zero-tolerance policy on depression, and they write books saying that our goal should be to eradicate it completely. Gloria Anzaldúa was a Chicana philosopher from deep South Texas, sixth-generation Mexican-American. She didn't much use the brain disease talk. Instead, she used the Aztec goddess Coatlicue to describe her dark mood. The weeks she spent in a depressive episode, when she stopped washing dishes and stopped seeing people, and mostly slept and read in the dark, she called it being in the stony arms of Coatlicue, a mother goddess with snakes for heads. Anzaldúa hated it, but she didn't want to call herself broken. Toward the end of her life, Anzaldúa described her depression as one stage in a 7-stage process she called conocimiento. Conocimiento is a deep kind of knowing that usually begins with an existential earthquake and ends with personal and social transformation. The idea isn't to get people to start calling their depression the Coatlicue state, but to interrogate the metaphors we use. Is there a more helpful word to use for depression besides mental illness? Is there any way to feel less bad by using better language? In the light, depression's a sign that you're broken. In the dark, depression's a sign that you are, in Anzaldúa's words, excruciatingly alive to the world. Insight number 5, anxiety is the price of freedom. Anxiety has long been called a neurosis, a disorder, an illness, a condition. Since 2009, it's the number one mental illness in America, especially among college students like mine. In ancient Greece and Rome, anxiety was considered a case of bad reasoning. Cognitive behavioral therapy is based in large part on the ideas of the Greek Stoic Epictetus, who said, "What upsets people is not things themselves, but their judgments about these things." At the same time, anxiety has always also been considered a medical problem, dating back to ancient Greece. So who gets to treat it? Cicero called philosophers doctors of the soul, but we also have therapists and psychiatrists. Who you go to for help will shape how you think of your anxiety. I don't think we need to stop seeing therapists or psychiatrists, but I call upon Soren Kierkegaard to help me see anxiety in the dark. He was extremely anxious, so much so that he called off his wedding engagement to a woman he never got over. He didn't want to condemn her to a life filled with his anxiety and depression, so he let her go. Despite all of it, Kierkegaard believed that anxiety makes us human. It's not reason, like Aristotle thought, or storytelling, or art. Kierkegaard thought anxiety makes us superior to animals and angels. The more anxious you are, the more human. The more anxious a civilization, the more profound. Anxiety is an intelligent reaction to a world like ours, filled with violence and war and poverty, and in which we're mostly impotent. For some of us, anxiety is debilitating. Medication helps. There was a book published in the 80s called Plato, Not Prozac. My book, Night Vision, is more like Plato and Prozac. No medication can cancel anxiety, nor should it. But we can at least try to turn down the volume. Once it's at a manageable level, Kierkegaard would advise us to listen to our anxiety, just like Lord said to listen to our anger. Anxiety is trying to say something big, and a lot of existentialist philosophy is devoted to the idea that we are, at bottom, terrified of big things. Death, nothingness, choice, freedom. We'll scrub toilets if it means avoiding an existential crisis. But darkness is part of life and it's part of us. And if we trash it, we trash ourselves. In the light, anxiety is a sign that you're irrational or sick. In the dark, anxiety is a sign that you are emotionally intelligent. If this were a traditional self-help book, I would try to get you to talk nicer to yourself about your dark moods. But I don't want to give you homework. It's not you who's told yourself that depressed people are broken. I want society to come up with more diverse words for our dark moods. Next time, when we're in the dark, instead of blaming ourselves for failing to look on the bright side, let's get critical of a nyctophobic society, too scared of the dark to see us accurately. The mission of Night Vision is to put dark moods under a dimmer light, where we won't show up looking broken, just human. Thank you for listening. I hope this book bite made you want to practice night vision.
Thank you, Mariana. That was 5 Big Ideas from Night Vision, Seeing Ourselves Through Dark Moods by Mariana Alessandri. You might also like our book bite for 3 Roads Back, How Emerson, Thoreau, and William James Responded to the Greatest Losses of Their Lives by Robert Richardson. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.